Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Professional wrestling, well, we like professional wrestling too. In the news this week, the headliner for this year's WWE Hall of Fame ceremony is revealed. In the lazy river of wrestling criticism, yes, it's the beginning of the road to WrestleMania. It's Royal Rumble on Saturday. We'll give you our predictions and whatever else we can think of about it. And in Vader Club this week, it's my pick, Akira Hokuto versus Mako Satomura for my birthday on 2001. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. A spry Chris Novembrino due to not being in pain or discomfort.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of discomfort because we're getting some serious drainage and breakup, but it is very much by hope this time next week normalcy will be resumed and I'll be able to hear things normally for the first time. Uninterrupted, ideally, for all of February. I'd love to go an entire month with normal hearing. So we're hopeful. We're hopeful.
Yeah, good.
I was able to get ear antibiotics this week. Very thankful for the state of New Mexico.
I'm on an 80s video game kick, Chris, with my new little toy that I got myself over Christmas. Video games that I spent way too much money on. That if I had just put in stock, you know, those the sound of your father coming in and go, you know, you invested that money in something like a stock instead of the playing those stupid video games when you're 12, you'd be rich right now.
Yeah, I know, but like, here's the thing with dads when they do that shit.
Oh, I'm 12.
Right, they do that shit, but they don't actually really enforce it. They just say it as like this scold, like I'm gonna call up my 13-year-old Chris, I'm gonna call up my stockbroker and be like, you know, I've thought about this, I don't really need Eternal Champions, I'd like to actually buy some shares of Sega. Yeah, like that was a plausible thing, Dad.
I want to play Legend of Cage. I don't want to play. Although if you I'm 12. What else do I have to do right now? You know, it's one of those things like if you ever met the kid who was 12 years old and did that, number one, that'd be the most repressed child I think you've ever met in your life. And just those are the kids who are like at 26. They just lose it. And they just decide, you know what? I did everything the right way all these years. The hell. And they just ruin their life.
Yeah, well, okay. So like
me, in some ways.
I mean, this is something I would do with my kid, but we'd actually, like, sit down. Like, I wouldn't just give them the scold. We'd, like, sit down and pick out a stock or something. Or I'd even do something like buy a stock when they buy a video game.
Actually, that's a good point. My dad knew nothing about stocks.
Right. So, like, again, it's... You can't go, oh, get market literate to a 12-year-old and act like that's a reasonable request.
I mean,
any more than like, you know, oh, go and pick me out a good bottle of scotch is not a reasonable request for a 12-year-old. They're not going to have the know-how.
Go be a sommelier.
I need a recommendation for a single malt. Please go and pick one out for me.
Actually, you know what? My dad would sit me down with like a book about like auto repair and say, you should learn this because you need skills or something. He would go, you need a stock. He goes, oh, you could probably play more video games working as an auto mechanic. I'm 12.
Yeah,
I have a paper route already.
My mom gave me the same financial literacy half-assed speech too, but it wasn't until I was in my 20s and I, you know, my grandfather passed it. I myself, independent of anyone else, actually sat around and learned any of that stuff. So I certainly don't think there's any use to what?
My dad like was pimping me out at like 11 to mow other people's lawns and stuff, and like it's like, hey,
oh, I'm saying to learn market literacy. Okay. It's one thing to tell your kids, oh, you know, the stock market's good, blah 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 blah. But if you're not actually teaching market literacy, what is that?
Oh well, I mean, at least he liked the stock market. You get that? It's all a scam put out there by the banks to take your money.
Yeah, no, I mean, that is certainly a dangerous logic that I have found myself, you know, like trying to educate against.
Same here. Let's get into wrestling news. We're no longer Jim Cramer talking stocks and whatnot.
Bye, bye, bye.
Just do the opposite. You'll make money. That's the lesson. If you all don't know the inverse Cramer, you got to learn it. Yeah.
Yeah, the inverse Cramer is actually not a bad strategy.
It's not.
It's funny that they've demonstrated that it outperforms.
Let me lay something on to you kids who may not know any better. Jim Cramer is pure pro wrestling, except for the business sector. He is a gimmick.
But unlike pro wrestling, well, I guess depending on how you engage with pro wrestling, unlike pro wrestling, if you listen to him, he'll make you broke.
It's very true. Rest in peace to Ed Wiskowski, who wrestled regularly from 1972 to 1996. He was a protege of Harley Race, big former college football player, pushed well in a lot of territories. I remember him, I think, from either Mid-South or Georgia. I can't remember. But he wound up in Oregon as a tag team partner of Buddy Rose. But, Chris, he did go through a few names, the Polish Prince, Derek Draper, etc. But he later gained national attention in the AWA as Colonel De Beers from South Africa. You've been on a kind of an AWA kick. Have you been privy to Colonel De Beers?
I sure have. Colonel De Beers, what a gimmick that is. I
lived through Southern wrestling, and then I turned on the AWA, and Colonel De Beers is feuding with Sergeant Slaughter. And he is saying more racist stuff than I ever got out of 60 years of Southern wrestling. Ironic, because Vern Gagne, not a friend of black wrestlers, did not have many on his roster. So I think he had one mid-card guy. And so in order to keep this gimmick going based on the cheap heat of apartheid in South Africa, Colonel De Beers would feud with Jimmy Snuka from Fiji and cut the same type of promo. Yes, Colonel De Beers, Ed Wiskowski, actually not a bad wrestler, pretty good promo, but it's one of those things where it's like he stuck with this gimmick, and boy, did he sell it. I'm sorry.
I got to tell you, though, it's really hard to believe that a South African could have Nazi or fascistic tendencies.
My favorite is once it kind of became clear that it was uncomfortable, he'd cut promos on other things. Like, he cut a promo on Scott Hall once, if you look this up, calling him just a giant walking steroid and how drugs were wrong in wrestling and stuff. I mean, it was basically a filter or an unfilter for just whatever whatever insults he wants to say at the time. What's the excuse? Oh, I'm a horrible, horrible racist in character. So I can also say other types of horrible crap as well.
No, this is okay. I'm playing a Nazi.
That's a new. Well, no.
He's
new
not.
One.
He's not playing a Nazi though. He's playing a boar, I believe. or what's they call Afrikaner? Is the Dutch Africans? I believe.
I'm using Nazi lowercase.
Okay,
N.
Thank you.
Yeah, lowercase N Nazi
as opposed to the Argentinians.
I'm a segregationist fascist.
Yes, there we go.
right. Which is. We don't usually say that. That's got a lot of syllables, Jeff, so we go with Nazi.
Actually, he might be the worst. Well, see, he at least sold it. I mean, I remember, like, I don't know if you ever saw, I forgot what pay-per-view it was, the Pat O'Connor, or the Pat O'Day, I forget what it was, the international tag team tournament where they had the entrance from South Africa, and one of them was Rocco Rock. I think, or it was either Rocco Rock or Johnny Grunz. They were both in the tournament on different teams at one point because they were both indie wrestlers signed up for this.
Wasn't the Truth Commission originally the South African Truth Commission?
Yes, we loved doing South African gimmicks.
And that was even more tasteless and of nothing in 1996 or 1997 when they rolled that out.
We were past apartheid at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, so like the Truth Commission was a
the Commandant or whatever his name was before he was replaced by Don Callis as the Jackal.
Yes, right.
Oh,
right.
Good God, that gimmick sucks. So although that does make sense for Vince McMahon because he's like 10 years behind everything. So now is the perfect time to do a cheap heat South African gimmick.
I just think he missed the good old days of the Sergeant Slaughter as an Iraqi thing. And he was like, how can I get some of the good days back?
Oh, man. As previously alluded to, WWE has announced who the headliner is for this year's Hall of Fame ceremony.
Hulk Hogan.
Triple H. In a now social media video, The Undertaker, Stephanie McMahon, and HBK all making an executive decision and bestowing upon Triple H that he will be the main event in this. This used to be Triple H's job, or it was, to pick who's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Look, on criteria, sure, he should be in. I am taking a more cynical approach that this is some form of corporate PR to basically announce to everybody, Vince McMahon is no longer part of this company, and here's the guy leading us through the darkness. And as reward for this big Netflix deal, et cetera, we're going to put Triple H in the Hall of Fame. Now, Vince McMahon always rejected it. I don't have a problem with it. I've always assumed, look, I view Triple H as a guy with a tremendous ego who probably deserves to have a bit of a tremendous ego in some ways. And in some ways I can't stand him because of the way he did business as a wrestler and being a reader of newsletters and internet rumors throughout my life. But you know, I don't care who WWE really puts in their Hall of Fame. It's their Hall of Fame. They can do what they want with it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see Hunter as unworthy of being in a wrestling Hall of Fame. I mean, it is a, you know, question of he got a lot of chances that other
yes.
people had. Yeah. Give me one second here and please vamp for one moment.
I think what would be hilarious is if Triple H just keeps on changing clothes during the ceremony to do for each different gimmick. But it's also one of those things like, man, I haven't had to vamp in a long time. This is going to be weird.
I just broke the doorknob to the house.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
Like the one that goes outside?
Yeah, the one that goes to the world.
How'd you do that?
I use power.
You can just screw that thing back in.
Probably. Well, I can just screw it in, or I could muscle it with my raw, unbridled.
Do you want me to pause the show so you can?
No, I don't want you to pause the show. I want this moment to be recorded and distributed out to the Voices of Wrestling podcasting community.
I would say that Triple H should go through all of his gimmicks. Should go through all of his gimmicks during the Hall of Fame ceremony. Like he should just keep on changing clothes, and like do like the the blue blood from Stanford gimmick.
Right.
You should do the biker Triple H with the stupid cut and the Iron Cross on it. He should do corporate Triple H.
I totally forgot that he used to use the Iron Cross
as
a regular feat. Way to go, Hunter. Way to go, Hunter.
Big fan of World War One Germany.
Yeah. We're taking it back. It looks so damn cool.
You know, he could do his rock impression again.
Yeah. Come out as a Nation of Domination. Yeah, people like
sure,
that.
Why not?
Why the hell not?
I don't know. I mean, I think the Hall of Fame peaked last year with Heyman's speech. Very un-WWE like, but I did enjoy it. Not a lot in other news, but injury bug has kind of plagued some people that you might have expected to be on the show this week, and Dakota Kai is in concussion protocol after I had this in the Lazy River. I didn't bring it up. Remember the match against the Shayna Baszler crew? It was Shayna and Zoe Stark, and Zoe delivered that giant drop kick.
Yes,
absolutely murder death her. Yeah.
That was a hell of a drop kick.
Dakota Kai is tough as hell too.
But a lot of people have been taking kind of crazy bumps lately.
JD McDonagh has a couple of broken ribs and a punctured lung, and it looks like he gave himself whiplash on that table shot on Raw.
Then, like, might I just say, why the F did he complete that match? Why the F didn't they go home? Because I was waiting to hear an injury report on this, because it was egregious to me, and even Michael Cole knew it. He was saying it on commentary. Like, we need to get medical professionals out here to look at JD McDonagh. He just whiplashed his head against the table. And then they proceed to go on with that match. McDonagh takes a reverse GTS to the back of the head, wildly irresponsible move call. And that match went on. He was still doing other high spots and everything with punctured broken ribs. I get that he's tough as hell. Whatever. Stop the effing match. It was gross.
I somewhat agree. Apollo Crews got banged up on SmackDown a couple weeks ago too, and he's going to be out for a little bit. Hobbs, I'm still trying to find out what the nature of that injury was, but he was coming back from knee surgery, so I'm a little nervous that he may have re-aggravated that. They did a parking lot brawl. They didn't do the actual match, but they just kind of did a pull apart type thing. And then he wasn't medically cleared allegedly to be at Dynamite this week, where they're going to actually do the actual match. Comings and goings. Jordan Grace has officially signed with WWE. Mustafa Ali back to TNA. Mackenzie Mitchell also joining TNA as part of their broadcast crew. Josh Alexander and Jonathan Gresham also appear to be gone from TNA. So TNA is kind of that rotating halfway house for content. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. And it occurs to me that TNA might actually be a lovely place for WWE to develop out announcing talent as well in their continued partnership deal.
Well, TNA's entire announcing crew are ex-WWE. So it's you know, the former drama king, the guy who used to do Rusev.
Aiden English.
English is, he goes by Matthew, I can't remember his last name. Tom, see, the thing is, I can only remember people for the bad news about them. The guy who
Tom Phillips
is a play-by-play guy. So you know, you have people there doing that, but it's one of the people are kind of thinking someone goes, is Josh Alexander gonna appear at the Rumble? I go, nobody will know who Josh Alexander is.
Yeah,
in the Rumble. He's not AJ Styles. It's not that level of.
TNA is not TNA.
Yeah,
like, is not bringing in Samoa Joe from TNA in 2009.
Yes.
Is TNA in 2025.
And that Royal Rumble was in Orlando. Home of TNA. You bring in Josh Alexander into Indianapolis and it's gonna be like, who? They'd have to sell it pretty big. If you're curious about numbers, I'm not that much anymore, given that the number of people who are now watching on Max for AEW is apparently a couple hundred thousand, I guess, but it was 604,000.17 for Dynamite, 827,000.19 for NXT. About 1.5 million and 0.33 for Saturday night's main event, and Raw on Netflix around 3 million, down from the original 5, but you're expecting a little bit of going down. But hey, you know, they're still very, very good numbers for everybody. So
yeah, I also, now with the increasing diffusion of the numbers, am unclear what the numbers are really going to tell me
right.
in terms of analysis. Outside of a prodigious drop in any of them, at this point, 100,000 up, 100,000 down is something that might be nice if you need 5 minutes of extra airtime on your podcast, but I don't think it's actually valid analysis.
On to the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched, whatever we had time for. We have a big pay-per-view this weekend. We're going to start with a preview of that. It is the Royal Rumble. For the chance to point to the sign and say, yes, you are going to WrestleMania. I, as an editorial note, I am more excited for this men's Royal Rumble match than I have been in quite some time, because the fatal flaw of the Royal Rumble for about 20 years now
is you always know who's going to win.
Well, it's that it's for the title shot at WrestleMania, so only a few people could win. And I always liked the idea of giving some rando on the mid-card a chance to win the Royal Rumble and make something, and maybe, you know, a title shot not at WrestleMania or something to that effect, and you can make a guy that way out of it. I realize I've watched every Royal Rumble live, I think, since the first one. It was the first one, historically, if you recall the history of this event, this was put on USA TV up against Jim Crockett's first pay-per-view, the finals of the Bunkhouse Stampede, on a Monday night in 1987. And we have now gone, what number is this for Royal Rumble? It's the 38th annual Royal Rumble. 4 matches announced. Start with what is going to be possibly the show stealer of it. 2 out of 3 falls for the WWE Tag Team Championship. Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, a.k.a. DIY, versus the Motor City Machine Guns, doing their first pay-per-view. Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin.
I'm thinking that this might be the start of some sort of rivalry to build to Mania, so the Motor City Machine Guns might win here. Although, actually, DIY have been working as the heels.
DIY are currently the champions, and they beat the Motor City Machine Guns here. I need to give you some background since you don't watch SmackDown on the reg.
Right, right. Maybe this is a hot potato back and forth, but maybe I'm thinking DIY retains with shenanigans.
I am thinking that, too, and I am thinking that this is leading to a multi-team thing at WrestleMania, because you have Pretty Deadly hovering around here, and they've been kind of getting attacked and been attacking both teams here and there. And you also have the Street Profits hanging around here. You could easily put Nathan Frazier and you could put Fraxium into this mix too for a main roster, multi-man party match at WrestleMania.
You could also see the Machine Guns winning here, and then
yes.
Pretty Deadly attacks them right after.
Or, you know, you could use this. Like you debuted the Motor City Machine Guns on SmackDown, and they won the titles. You could do a total kind of reboot here and have the Motor City Machine Guns win on your second biggest pay-per-view and say, here are the guys. We think they're important. You may not watch SmackDown, but you may want to watch after watching.
That would be useful for literally a fan like me.
Yes.
Who just isn't catching it on Fridays because you do other things on Fridays.
I think so, too. I mean, it's one of those things where it would be smart business to do it that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, as I look at my life, just having, you know, a long-term relationship, it's like me and my girlfriend hang out on Fridays. That's what we do, you know? Like, so I'm not going to be catching SmackDown Live ever. And if I've got anything to do on Saturday, which is usually a work day for me, by the time we're talking about sitting down and watching SmackDown, it's Sunday night or it's Monday. And then why am I watching SmackDown when Raw's going to be on?
The other non-Rumble match that has been announced, Cody Rhodes, your champion, versus Kevin Owens in a ladder match for the Undisputed WWE Championship. But the Undisputed and the Winged Eagle Championship belts will both be suspended above the ring. I adored Kevin Owens' throwback to Terry Funk's shirt the Dusty Sucks Eggs, Cody Sucks Egg shirt, now available on WWE Store, by the way, if you want to buy one. That's so smart. It's so good. I have thoroughly enjoyed this feud because Kevin Owens is correct, and it's actually the appearance from the Go Home Raw is that a lot of this is kind of getting to Cody Rhodes. And I
like it too. And I like Kevin Owens basically becoming the Terry Funk to Cody Rhodes' Dusty Rhodes. And there were times during the Funk and Rhodes feuds where Funk would have points. Like, he was the heel, but he wasn't wrong about Dusty, being overexposing and self-aggrandizing and some of the stuff that he would say about Dusty. He was dead on the money. And I think that's what I enjoy about Owens doing it. That's also what I enjoy about Punk and Cody. And Cody, for his part, has found a way as a babyface champion to not just sit there and be a chump when these people say stuff to him. He has a pulse.
Yeah. And and the hallmark of Terry Funk, I mean, we talked about this after he passed, like he would do that also with like Jerry Lawler in a feud with him. Ric Flair in that 89 feud. He was a teller of truths, but he was still a jerk about it. So you'd still boo him, but he was still telling the truth quite a lot.
Yeah, true telling asshole. Like, and that, I think...
The jerk with a point, as we call CM Punk a little bit too.
And like, actually, that's what Drew McIntyre's kind of doing as well. And I think it's really interesting and fun and such a nice post-McMahonism to have these like clouds of doubt around people like Sami Zayn being casted by heels who might actually be right. They might actually be telling the truth about these people, but they also might be full of shit. And that's what makes this really fun. Like if they're just straight lying and you know that they're like a mustache twirling liar, you know, Karrion Kross is interesting now because he's not in a Vince era. He would just be Sean O'Hare. In this era, he's more nuanced than that.
Everything about having the two belts, though, feels there's a light in the back of my head that's blinking, going, Kevin Owens can win this thing, and they may just do the title switch at there to then give it back to Cody before the main event in some way. I don't know. What are the chances that Kevin Owens wins this thing, you think? Because it actually plays into my Rumble thinking, too.
I mean, it would be a really interesting move, especially if Owens... What if Owens and Zayn really are in cahoots?
That's a possibility I thought of, too.
That would be a really fun...
I thought about
a really fun twist at the Rumble, and that would shake up things and really frame things going into Mania season. It'd be a thing that you couldn't say you didn't see coming at all, because it definitely was earned. But I like that. I like that move.
The other thing that I'm thinking is overbooked mess with like Cody grabs the winged belt, which doesn't really count, and then Owen somehow gets the undisputed title.
Yeah, no clear winner, and then we drag that out, so we pull Owens and Rhodes out of, like, the chamber.
Or so we could get a third main event, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I'm...
Yeah, I know, I think Rhodes retains here, because, I guess this gets into my Rumble prediction, then.
Okay, it both gets into our Rumble predictions. I am actually... I'm going to say Kevin Owens wins the title, but he loses it before Mania.
Interesting. Okay. I'm going Rhodes wins.
I think something like that, maybe. I'm mostly on the Rhodes train, though, but I'm not gonna say I'm definite about it.
I would dig it. Here's the thing that's pushing me against that. Just one last plot point is that Owens has been consistently screwed out of this title, so him getting it in any way, shape, or form is a bit of an inertial force on him.
You know what it's going to be? It's going to be he gets screwed out of this, and then he calls the Winged Eagle the real world's championship or something like that. I don't know.
I mean, somewhat that could happen. A third person involves themselves in this match and costs Owens. And then that spins like McIntyre or something. I don't know. But yeah, something.
Women's Royal Rumble, only, what, like 10 women have announced so far, which gives plenty of room for surprises. I do expect them. But Nia Jax, Bayley, Charlotte Flair, Naomi, Bianca Belair, Liv Morgan, Raquel Rodriguez, Lyra Valkyria, Ivy Nile, and Io Sky all announced for it. Lazy River here. If you didn't watch Saturday Night's main event, that Rhea Ripley versus Nia Jax match was better than it had any right to be. I'm liking foul-mouthed Nia Jax when she works, because she's just calling her opponent a bitch the entire time, and I'm laughing out loud. Like she's pushing the boundaries. Chris, I will let you go first. Anything you want to say? Any surprises? Any returns? Anyone from NXT you could see being in this Royal Rumble? The floor is yours.
I mean, I think they're probably going to scrape NXT a decent amount here. I could see the Metaphor girls like Lash Legend might get thrown into this. I don't know. I tend to think that they haven't had Charlotte around for a minute. They want to get her going again. Hunter loves Charlotte. I think Charlotte wins this.
I am also going with Charlotte Flair to win this. I expect Becky Lynch to return. I think Asuka might return. Boy, she's had a week. Apparently she has a stalker or something. And she's like, guys, you know, don't try and date me. Don't fall in love with me. She's called police. It was very scary. She was in her feels a bit on X this week. It was a bad week for her. I expect Jordynne Grace to reappear in this Royal Rumble. I expect Mako Satomura to possibly appear in this Rumble since this is her retirement year. I'll take an off-the-board surprise that many people aren't expecting because I think they were just announced for their first tag team match very soon. But I think Peyton Royce of the Iconics shows up in this. For NXT, I'm thinking Lash Legend is a good call, especially with the Bianca types here. I think Jade Cargill may show up to eliminate Bianca because I think Bianca's behind the beatdown. And I think it's going to be light, relatively light on NXT. But I do think two people that they like that he can't find anything to do with, like I think Zarya and Sol Ruka. So Sol Ruka can do her finisher because it's kind of awesome. I think they show up. I think they keep Roxanne Perez away.
No, yeah, I don't see Roxanne getting in the mix here. But
maybe
yeah,
Cora Jade shows up. I mean, she's always good to be a flunky type of a thing.
But yeah, Zarya is a good call because, like, she's good and she can talk and she's, like, kind of ready. And she's
lost in the mix right now because you have Julia and you have Stephanie Vaquer.
In a weird way, I don't think she can develop down in developmental, so you might as well call her up and let the other people kind of, like, you filled up the roster down there in developmental, and I don't know how much developing Zarya really needs. I think she's pretty ready to go.
I think you may see, like, some people who have been on the main roster who are in NXT come in. I think, like, Shotzi may get a shot here and stuff like that, but yeah. But we both have Charlotte. Let's go to the Men's Rumble. Since it ties into your Cody Kevin Owens prediction, I'll let you go first again.
I mean, it's hard to go against Punk after that go home promo here on Raw. I think there's just a lot of business sense to this. I think this serves as Hunter's passive FU to AEW. By taking the two things that they discarded, saying they had no value whatsoever, and turning it into the WrestleMania main event and drawing Mondo Cash off of it, I think there's a lot of appeal there. And the fact is, Phil Brooks and Cody Rhodes are white-hot people right now. Everyone is very much eating out of the palm of both these guys' hands. People enjoy both their promos, and they're both having great matches. I think Punk is the guy. I don't think other potential storylines are as intriguing. I don't want to see Cody Roman too. I think Punk has a favor hanging over his head. I think Punk's going to use that favor to win the Rumble.
Yeah, the favor plays into my pick too. I think you're right. I think I mostly think you're right. I think Punk is the call. But the favor thing is standing there leering at me. And Cody is mostly SmackDown. And Charlotte, I mean, unless we're doing Charlotte Rhea on the Raw roster again, I mean, I'm wondering if this is where we get Gunther's opponent and we get John Cena winning. That seems strong. But I'm going to go with something that's very weird because of the favor angle. I'm going to say Sami Zayn wins the Royal Rumble, but he's not going to be the guy in the main event because of the favor. I think the favor is going to be CM Punk wants to be in the main event, and because I saved your bacon at War Games, Paul, I need you to tell Sami Zayn to stand down so I can get the main event. And then somehow Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens end up in a big WrestleMania, probably another ladder match of some kind, because they're destined to do this forever, as you might recall.
Or Punk screwing over Zayn, perhaps seeing if he can get Ava to make a match for the number one contendership for him. He goes up to Adam Pearce. The other day I was watching NXT and I saw this excellent managerial idea. I wanted to suggest it to you real quickly. But I could see him going to Heyman being like, I want a match against Sammy for the shot at WrestleMania, and Sammy loses at Elimination Chamber to Punk. And then that builds to Punk versus Cody at Mania. Sammy is now pissed off, and Kevin can really start pouring the poison into Sammy's ear. You should have just listened to me this whole time.
Before I get to prop bets, just going to Raw on this lazy river, I kind of want to see Logan Paul versus Gunther. I kind of do. I kind of want to see Logan Paul, number one, talk somebody into the building for that match, and then to just watch him fly around and watch Gunther murder death him. I am kind of here for that, Chris.
No, and I think Gunther benefits from these periodic de facto babyface feuds as well. I don't think it hurts his heel indomitable champion mystique at all. Having a twerp like Logan Paul come out there, think he can hot dog on Gunther. I'm so here for this. And Gunther is so good at delivering slapstick, menacing comedy in the form of wrestling, where, you know, Logan Paul kicks and be like doing his little douchey dance or whatever. And then Gunther just like looks at him, dead eyes him, and then chops the crap out of him. And then Logan Paul's crying on his knees after getting slapped once by Gunther. I think we're all here for this. I think that would actually be a good WrestleMania feud too. One, I think it would do decent business. And two, I think it helps balance out the card a little bit with something that's not necessarily going to be as like heavy. You know what I mean? Having a Logan Paul versus Gunther match, you can still have a good work match, but still have some comedy in there.
Yeah, but I don't think it's going to be Mania. I think John Cena and Gunther, so he can do the attitude adjustment on Gunther. Be impressive.
I don't think that's possible. How could he possibly pull that off?
I think this is going to also be very NXT light in terms of the men, because they have such a loaded roster on both shows. But I think we're going to get Joe Hendry. I think we're going to get Joe Hendry, and we're going to get Ethan Page. And I think Joe Hendry is going to eliminate Ethan Page before Joe Hendry himself is eliminated. And here's my kind of surprise. I think because of the TNA-WWE relationship, I don't think you're going to get Nick Nemeth in the Rumble, but I do think you're going to get Dolph Ziggler just for a bit. That's my prediction on that one.
That'd be interesting. My way outside the box one, what's Elias up to? Maybe we get Elias back in the Rumble here.
I think mine is probably AJ Lee in the women's one, although I think you're going to have plenty of surprises in that one already. But that would shock the hell out of me, because I don't think she wants to come. I think she's enjoying being a TV writer / comic book writer, et cetera, et cetera. And she hasn't had time to train. But it wouldn't shock me either.
Yeah.
So that's our Rumble preview. Saturday, it starts an hour earlier than usual. So set your clocks accordingly if you're watching it on the Peacock and you're watching it live. I do enjoy the Royal Rumble. I do. It's one of the better innovations. Other than War Games, it's probably the second best innovation in wrestling in my lifetime in terms of matches and stuff.
I think done right, the Royal Rumble can be unbelievably entertaining and can be a spider web for stories that really only can be rivaled by the G1 in terms of storytelling possibilities.
Like 92 was the best told story because they kept on bringing guys from Flair's past to get in there and to be fair to Flair, and it was for the title and there were stakes and stuff like that. There are opportunities. Like, I love dumb comedy just as a palate cleanser in the Rumble. Like, I tell people this, and people go, "You're stupid for thinking this because that's not pure wrestling or whatever." But I go, my favorite elimination as a set piece, 2004.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Randy Orton and Chris Benoit are both down on the ground, knocked out. They're like, oh, it's a great opportunity for somebody. And Lamont comes running out and introduces Ernest the Cat Miller. And they start dancing to Somebody Call My Mama. And Taz is just ribbing JR the entire time. It's stupid comedy, but it's one of my favorite spots. That and also the classic Iconics interview from backstage with Kathy Kelly after getting eliminated? Also, awesome stuff. Any random Rumble memories you want to share before we move on?
Not that I can think of off the top of my
head. So it is your turn then.
All right. Then I guess now that we've done Rumble, we're done with Rumble, yeah?
Yeah, we're done with Rumble.
Okay, so then back. Now, like, let's kick it over to NXT, which I don't think is going to be a particularly long episode here. This is a brand in this brutal holding pattern right now with these feuds, and
yes,
they're all utterly uninteresting. I could every single one of them, Julia and Bailey versus Cora Jade and Roxanne. I mean, Bailey and Roxanne could be interesting. It's not. Fallon versus Shotzi, not interesting. Couldn't be interesting. Ethan Page versus whoever he's facing, whether it's Cedric Alexander or Javon Wired Mouth Shut Evans, boring. I feel like I've seen Ethan Page and Noodle Arms fight 1,000 times at this point. And then Jakara Jackson and Lash Legend are a boring tag team that don't really have much in my identity, and I wouldn't want them to get belted anyways. I think if anything, we've seen too much of them.
I think they have good, see, it's weird because they have good chemistry together in terms of personality. They don't act like a tag team all that much, except for like the one move. You know what I'm saying?
Just, yeah, they have that. And in this match, it, like, you really felt like, man, all they have is that one move.
They wrestle like those old WWE tag matches where you'd have basically two singles guys being a tag team. Like, it'd be like Kofi Kingston and some random guy as tag champs for a while. They all do their singles moves.
Like a Divas tag team from 10, 15 years ago, where they just have like no real formative identity in the ring. They're not doing any ring psychology. I think, you know, look, Jakara and Lash is a small guy, big guy, classic formula, right? And I don't
think Jakara's not that small.
But she's smaller than Lash. Yeah, she should be wrestling small.
Yes.
And you know what I mean by
that? No, you're right on that.
The scalpel and the hammer here,
yes,
right?
Like, yes.
Yeah, you know.
Tully and Arn, yeah. Brett and Jim Neidhart.
And then, like, the other continuity drop is when Lash comes into the ring, she does not move. Like, we were talking about Nia earlier. And I think Nia, one of the big things that's developed in her wrestling game here over the last 10 years, and you and I have not always been fans of hers.
No.
On countless occasions. She now actually exudes menace in the ring.
Yes.
At long last.
Yes.
After like almost 12 years, she actually comes off as a menacing large figure in the ring, which is the character that she's wrestling.
She works like a giant.
And Lash doesn't. Lash doesn't. And more alarmingly, Lash, when she tries to work power moves, does not seem to have the power requisite to work those power moves.
I would agree. Let me bring up something from earlier in that team. And it's something that was pointed out to me, and I didn't think about it, but I think they're correct. Roxanne Perez as a heel. I don't think she works solo as a heel, but her and Cora Jade are a very good heel team in terms of being a duo. I think she needs Cora Jade to come off effectively as a heel versus when she's solo.
Yeah, I don't like Cora is adding something to this act. The one potential, or at least negative to me, of Cora versus someone else is that I have no interest whatsoever in ever seeing Cora turn on Roxanne. So when Roxanne makes Cora the fall guy, it does nothing for me because I don't feel remotely sympathetic to Cora Jade at all. She's patently unlikable.
Yes, I know that's a bit of a problem. I mean,
it's like oh
I hurt her feelings.
Oh no! Oh, you hurt Cora Jade's feelings. Well, she sucks. I don't care. You know, like you're a jerk, but she's a bigger jerk. So who cares?
Yeah. Boy, I found this. Yeah, this NXT show. It was there and it existed. It wasn't horrible, but it was still they're building character. But you're right, holding pattern. To get to Vengeance Day.
Yeah, no, it wasn't horrible, but like it's for me when it's 2 hours that I can just sort of ride the fast forward button through, even if it means a shorter watch time for me, that's not really what I want. I want to just leave it on play and be engaged in the show and not just like puttering through going like, okay, I don't need to see like this meandering tag match go on for 7 minutes longer than it needs to with no stakes.
Yeah. We'll get to that in AEW, but,
I do want to land of 7 minutes longer than it needs to.
I do want to mention though, that, you know, it appears that NXT may be doing things that AEW does that are bad for it. And also Raw does this, and I think they're doing this to train people, but you don't have to do promos live, especially ones that are quote-unquote pre-tapes. You can do a second take. And the reason I bring this up, I told you this when we were watching, that Carmen Petrovic-Kehlani Jordan interaction is one of the worst line readings I have ever seen in professional wrestling. Kehlani Jordan just wanted to spit out her lines and get out of there.
All hey, those years of training, she just never actually had time to feel feelings, Jeff.
I mean, there was no listening to the other person's lines, taking it in, thinking about it, and then saying it. It was, I'm ready to jump on that line, say these lines that are heelish and get out of this scene because I don't want
to
do it.
Did you not have
right
time
now
to have friends when you were training for Michigan State, Kalani? I know cartwheels. I don't know people at all.
That would be a story, though.
That would at least be a story.
I was so focused on my athletic greatness, I had no time
for
friends.
This is what I was pitching early on, right? Like, the obvious pathway to heeldom for this character is the same route to success, right? You know, the tree has two branches. She was this high-level, high-performing achiever, and like what we were saying earlier with stocks and stuff, like the, you know, at 26, you have one setback and it's earth shattering because you've never had setbacks before. And you didn't realize it, like you could fail. And even worse, you might get screwed over. So you fail and you did your best and you should be achieving and you're not achieving because someone screwed you over. And for someone who spent their whole life always winning, always winning, always winning, that can be a snap, an inflection point. And that should have been the easy story for Kalani. Instead, we're getting this like snarling, like, he doesn't love you, you know that, right? Like she never cared about that crap before.
No, and it's one of those things also, just on the delivery portion of it. It's something that you don't understand unless you've actually tried to film something or been on television or whatever. You think that you're going too slow. You think you're speaking too slow when you're speaking at a normal enunciated pace. So you think for energy, you have to pick it up or whatever. Now you compare this, and there's a perfect example this week. That Mariah May promo on AEW.
She was great.
Was fantastic.
Yeah. But
she also has acting chops and acting training, and she was very slow, or she was deliberate. I wouldn't say it was slow, but it was deliberate and at a normal pace, where I am talking to you right now, Toni Storm, and I am going, she had a cadence that would work. Kehlani was so nervous that she kind of spit out everything. The first time I realized I speak too quick sometimes when I'm nervous was when I was still doing stand up and trying to get over stage fright, and I had what I thought was like 10 minutes of material, and I finished it in 2. And you're just like, oh my god, what do I talk about right now? But it's something that you learn, but you need to learn to relax. And you need to learn that just
time,
because
space in speaking,
yes, just because you are enunciating does not mean that you are going slow. And
also,
that's the note I would give her.
Wrestling cadence, and this is where I think there's a very, very big dereliction in NXT on this. Wrestling cadence is inherently 10 to 20% slower than normal speech, because you want to make sure that everyone in the audience, especially in a live audience, can understand each sentence.
Okay, I thought you were setting me up for a joke there and it didn't come.
No. It's not that they're all dumb and you need to speak.
No, I was saying,
the mouth breathers in the back.
No. You have to go slower and pause and only do 3 or 4 words at a time, so the audience has a chance to say what in between everything.
But I think it's important. That's always been sort of taught as a general wrestling rule, and that should still apply backstage, with the presumption that the video is going to be viewed by a live audience in the venue, and there's going to be a bit of an echo. So you just want to make sure you don't have one sentence cascading onto the next sentence. And then the other thing, as you brought up, is all of the line delivery is wooden. And then finally, the Carmen Petrovic and Ashanti the Adonis love story is not something that anybody cares about. I think a relationship like this, if they're not heels, we have to actually want to see them together. And they've done no work at all to get us to want to see these two together or care if they're not.
Yeah,
that's just a thing that Carmen's doing.
Yeah, I like Obafemi as a champion, though. I think he's good, but it's one of those things where it's like Eddie Thorpe and his story of tricking. It was a good story, kind of ruined by the finish of the first match, and then we just went right back to Eddie Thorpe again. And I'm like, okay, cool.
And I don't think this did anything for Eddie Thorpe. He has nothing to do now. I send him onwards if because you've removed any cause for him to be. And in that redirect promo, I think the thing that I found most frustrating is that he didn't really seem to address the ways that he had been screwed over, and that he's an asshole with a point, right? He's completely abandoned that character, and it's the only thing that made him interesting. I also think
the planner. They've also like abandoned the he's the Kaiser Soze type, who is orchestrating like fake beatdowns to get into title matches and stuff.
Right, and even the idea that he's I get that they don't want to unflatter Ava, but they had a very nice story bubbling here of Ava is not a great manager and can be played. She's well-intentioned, but not capable. And I think that is actually an interesting GM story to tell that they're not doing on the other shows. And Thorpe was a part of that, and it made Thorpe more interesting for his part, because he's manipulating things in the ring and he's manipulating things outside the ring. Yeah, I don't know, made him multifaceted. And now he's just like, I have to train harder, stuff about the tribe. And like, it's generic.
Yeah. I have nothing else. Do you want to move on to AEW Dynamite then?
Yeah, yeah. The NXT is done.
They pretty much tried the same playbook as last week. And it kind of okay, we're gonna put Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay in our first segment. Not a bad idea. They're the B story. We're gonna put Mercedes Moné and Yuka Sakazaki in the main event. It was almost as if somebody lost a bet and said, I bet you can't find a segment that you can do to try and get the heat back up, et cetera, et cetera. And he goes, well, I'm going to try it with my women's or with my TBS champion. And I just think all these matches this week were like about, they could have been cut in half and gotten to the same point because nobody believed the other people would win.
And the time would have been better used by doing promos and storytelling and world building yet again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a recurring problem, but like, you know, it's not a new take, but I mean, look, do we need to see Jay White and Wheeler Yuta stretch on for 15 minutes?
No.
Or would we be better off having anyone come out and address the Death Riders story in a coherent way? I, at this point, someone needs to call out Moxley. I know the commentary sort of did, but actually they didn't. They say we assume that the title's in the briefcase. I think someone needs to call him out that there's no title in the briefcase.
Well, the title doesn't matter because he's the champ. Why do you need
I didn't think
prop?
That did anything either.
I don't either.
I've heard some people throw roses at that promo, like that helped develop the story. I don't think that did anything.
I thought it was a decent promo. It's just one of those things
it's
where it's
fine.
Like...
It's only fine insofar as eventually we get a reveal that there's no title in the briefcase and that Moxley has completely just hijacked the title because he views himself as the title. But...
Here's what made me angrier than that on this show, because it had potential and all you need is some second level thinking and some questions being asked when you're pitched storylines or producing a segment where you can make it a little bit deeper. So we start out and we have Will Ospreay versus Brian Cage
Okay.
So number one,
last week was Omega versus Cage.
This week was Ospreay versus Cage. And we didn't need this match to go to the end. But somehow, for some reason, Tony Khan wanted it to go to the end. We should have just had Murdoch Monster come in, DQ, boom, boom, we do the beatdown, et cetera, et cetera. But, we start with Don Callis saying, hey, I got this video for you. And it's Kenny Omega has been attacked in the back, so no one's going to come to help him. Okay. And then we do the match. And he starts getting attacked. And then Kenny Omega comes running full speed out to save Will Ospreay. After Excalibur on commentary has
been
over.
Did he have a weapon or not? Did he have a chair?
He had a chair.
Okay, I was like, I can't remember.
But Excalibur has been putting over the entire time. There's nobody here to help Will Ospreay. And here comes Kenny, not selling the beating that we just saw on the screen, not struggling, not bandaged up, not limping his way down bravely with a chair to get some sort of emotional resonance.
He should be DDPing this right
now.
Full
speed. Yes, he should. Oh, that's it. Yes, we beat him up and, oh, his diverticulitis surgery may be in danger or whatever. Because remember, that was a story that his career was at stake.
And we have a classic upper mid-card / main event wrestler from yesteryear that we could use as a template to tell this story. And by the way, that injury angle got Diamond Dallas Page over big time.
Yes, but then they both get like tombstone pile driver or whatever, and it eventually becomes the Will Ospreay crawling over Kenny Omega and the screaming to the heavens, why God, why did you hurt Kenny Omega? It's like, how am I supposed to feel about that when he's running full speed and healthy into this situation? It just gets bonked from behind. It was just so lame. And then they repeated the spot sort of with how Kenny and Will got taken advantage of with the Death Riders, with Jay White holding Wheeler Yuta for a second, whatever, sling blade or whatever the hell is that thing is, or you know, whatever his finisher
right.
is, but again, it's one of these things where it's like, Will Ospreay was a heel who knew the Callis family. Was he not expecting the other two members to be there or whatever?
Jay White's been a heel
most of
yeah.
his life. Jeff Jarrett's been a heel most of his life. Was he not expecting the Death Riders to attack, to all be there too? Did he not? Where are Jeff Jarrett's friends like Satnam Singh and Jay Lethal to help him in a match against the Death Riders? Who are just dull.
You can tell me as much as you want on whatever newsletter you want that the in-ring action is killer, but there's just all these clear opportunities to tell stories, advanced stories. Have the Death Riders take out Jarrett's friends. Have Jarrett's friends come out. Basically, you have them be the sacrificial lamb. So it's a Pyrrhic victory. Jarrett wins the match, but he loses his friends, and now he has to go up against Moxley without his friends, but he does have his title shot. And, you know, like that could be a good story if you actually believed in Jarrett. Then you have MJF come out, and you have the "see, I told you so" angle at the end of this, and I still don't care.
We can't have psychology in the match because we have to do the pure wrestling match. We have to get to the end because you know, people get very upset at DQs or whatever, even though they sometimes forward a story, guys.
Right.
But no. We have to have the pure Ring of Honor, shake hands, 3.5-star, 15-minute classic where there's no psychology and they're just kind of doing moves and nobody's really getting over and the crowd's just sitting on the – and occasionally they'll give the "this is awesome" clap, 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 even though it's just smooth wrestling with no real point to it. And then we'll do the character development later, but then the character development doesn't make any sense because these guys are superhuman athletes who never sell anything and you're just like – I'm just wondering, like, all of these matches could have been half the time.
Right.
Like, why do I need to watch AR Fox for the second week in a row after he's been in the doghouse for a year and a half? We're not getting
like,
a passport.
AR Fox doesn't get to talk and, yeah, AR Fox doesn't get to talk and get himself over in any meaningful way or explain why he wants these matches.
Yeah, so who cares if Ricochet comes in and beats the crap out of him?
All you can do is make this oblique reference to Lucha Underground. And I guess it gets back to the other thing is like how much of this show basically trades or is getting by on IP from like New Japan, Lucha Underground,
Ring
TNA,
of Honor, PWG.
Ring of Honor. Yeah, like there's even WWE. There's a lot of old IP that basically gets rehashed. And then the stuff that is original, like Toni Storm doing a character of herself that was unstuck in time. I mean, I guess your mileage varies. You either found that delightful for a few weeks and are super excited to see Timeless Toni Storm back, or you groaned when you saw Timeless Toni Storm go, "It was all a ruse all along," or however she
yes.
says it.
Actually, they did that on Collision, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Also doing that on Collision.
Which, you know, I know
Knowing
you want
full
eyeballs.
Well, what the ratings are, yeah.
Yes, don't do your big angles on Collision anymore.
It's never borne out. Like, it'd be one thing if at some point in the last, I don't know, 2 years of trying to do a big angle on Collision, you could show that really moved the needle and helped get Collision moving in the right direction. As it were, it's a minor miracle Collision isn't canceled.
I mean, give me a week of build for Yuka Sakazaki and Mercedes. Give me an interaction between the CEO character and Yuka Sakazaki, which will drive Mercedes nuts because Yuka Sakazaki is always happy and she's the magical girl and she's, you know, she's the businesswoman or whatever. Give me a reason to watch the match because I'm here for this because I like both players, but it's one of those things where I want to believe Yuka Sakazaki can win this match. I want to believe that there's a feud involved. I want to take in Mercedes' history of loving Asian wrestling and Japanese wrestling, and as she calls it, her Asian kink, because she used to be married to an Asian man. I mean, she loves Asian culture. Let's use those things.
I would want her to make Yuka Sakazaki miserable. Actually, yes. Like, make it seem like that's the other problem with these Mercedes matches, at least to me, is okay, they're well worked, and she is wrestling well right now. She's finally gotten on track after having kind of a rocky start in AEW. But the thing that's still missing for me with this CEO character, which also, again, trades on, you know, secondhand IP from WWE, is she's got no personality. She like, okay, you're going up against Yuka Sakazaki. The move to me is you should hate that this girl is so happy, that she's a happy warrior and that she's not scared of you. And your goal should be to make her scared of you. It actually would be a really great sort of, you know, match of you're not just trying to win the match, you're trying to psychologically break her.
Yes, you want to psychologically break her before the match.
So and during it, too.
Yes. Yeah, give me that story. And, yeah, it's a combination of that. It's a combination of her aura is no longer what she is because she's what she's trying to do is she's trying to be the female Rock in AEW because she wants to be a heel, but she still wants the babyface pops of, you know, saying the city and saying, welcome your CEO or whatever it is. But it's still one of those things where it's like, look, she is one of the best at building these types of stories over weeks and stuff like that. If you've watched her in the other place, let's do that. Let's have a few weeks of build here.
And she showed she can be like disdainful. Yes. Like it's actually a personality trait that she does very well. She does disdain well. She doesn't do it at all on this here.
I mean, it's a fine match, but it was like, there's nothing there. It's like having a well-cooked steak with no seasoning on it. You know, it'll fill you up. It'll do you well, but you're not going, man, this is one of the best meals of my life right now.
Well, and she's just playing the character aloof.
Yes.
You know, yeah, there's not a character there when everything doesn't really seem to bother you.
I'll compare it to another match. Jeff Jarrett is the last outlaw. He is trying, scraping, desperate for a singles title in AEW before he leaves, and he set his sight on the world title so that his legacy is born. Why is he just wrestling a match? He should know better. He should be pulling out the spot. He should almost be a trickster and doing heel stuff while he's a babyface to do what he can to get that match with Moxley to prove to Jon Moxley that he is a threat to the title. But instead, he's just I'm just gonna do a well worked match with old Claudio here.
By the way, you're Jeff Jarrett. That has never been the formula for you getting over.
Correct.
You need to try something else, pal. You're Jeff Jarrett. So I'm completely with you. Jeff Jarrett should be the trickster veteran. He is the last outlaw. And what he should have is the bag of tricks that actually dispatches the Death Riders and pisses them off because they all think that they are younger, faster, stronger, better than him. And he's always like throwing the sand in their eyes. You know, Pac shows up and he trips Pac and runs him right into stairs or he handcuffs Pac.
Yes.
I mean, Jarrett should have all the tricks up his sleeve to handle the outside interference and make the Death Riders look clownish, which should make Moxley angrier, angrier and angrier and angrier. And like when Jarrett finally gets to Moxley, a perfectly fine story is that Jarrett has a lot of tricks, but Moxley's way too pissed off for any of that stuff to work now.
Right, and he kills him like Rocky IV and Apollo Creed.
Yeah. But like honestly, you almost like all that stuff's really the trickster thing. It's really essential if we're gonna believe that Jarrett's got a chance in hell, right?
And it would also kind of baby Jeff Jarrett a little bit more.
Oh yeah,
because absolutely. Jeff Jarrett right now. I mean, my God, we've now had
he gets
two...
to be the Roadrunner to their Coyote. That's what Jarrett needs.
As opposed to Jerry Lawler promos. And you remember when we were in this city in 1984? No! Because most of your crowd is 30. You dope. Speaking of which,
had an amorphous gimmick, Jeff. Like your wrestling style is kind of ill-defined. It's just like classic, generic Southern. You need something, dude.
Can we give Dennis Condrey 3 seconds on TV, please? On
Dynamite? If we're going to mention him.
Yes. God, I wanted to see what he looked like these days. Or at least see him, because it makes me happy to see him. I assume he's going to get involved in that match on tape for Collision that nobody's going to watch because they're watching the Rumble. By the way, Mid-South Street Fight in Alabama where Mid-South didn't exist. But okay, we're fine. We're historians. Yeah, but I wanted to see a little Dennis Condrey, that's all. But I got nothing else for
yeah, I got nothing else. It's
so
continues to be a hollow show a little bit.
Let's get to just a hose-worthy match. because I hadn't watched this before I selected it. I had just heard about it. Akira Hokuto versus Mako Satomura from April 29th, 2001 in, I believe it's pronounced Gaia, G-A-E-A. Brother, if you like hard slaps and dropping people on their heads, this match is for you. And this is how it started. It's like, this is like, they're like three thirds to this match. The first one is, we're just going to smack the crap out of each other and do suplexes that drop people on their heads. All right, cool. Second third is Mako Satomura is now tired and struggling and ticked. So she is going to use her body as a weapon to try and finish this match any way she can.
That's what it really switched on for me. The way she weaponizes her body is outstanding.
And there's a, in the first third, there's a thing here that someone else should do where Akira Hokuto and Mika Satomura are both exchanging blows from on top of a turnbuckle and switching positions every time, trying to get control of who can jump off the turnbuckle and kill someone. I loved it. I thought it was great. It was great psychology. And then the third third of this match, we go back to just Akira Hokuto just decides to just start suplexing the crap out of Mako Satomura. And I'm watching this going, how is her neck not broken? I adore this match, Chris. I had so much fun watching this match. I don't quite know where to start with it, but if you have some place, get in here, please. Because I
think you really locked it to me. My favorite part's the second third.
Yes.
Like when Mako goes into overdrive, there's this one point where Akira Hokuto is in the turnbuckles and Mako does this like somersault kick thing. And
yes.
It just has
the Pele kick thing. Yeah.
That Pele kick has so much fire on it. It's like flames are coming off of her foot. Mako, we talked about before. I know we're just like, we're on kicks right now at Vader Club here. Mako rules, dude. Everything she does offense-wise makes you believe.
It's like Akira Hokuto to start just smacking the hell out of her, does like a drop on the head with a suplex or whatever, and then Mako just gets up and kicks the crap out of her, and you're like, my God. Oh, I remember the other thing. Third of the match where we have just decided to start doing like T-bone suplexes and crap onto people's heads and things of that nature. Akira Hokuto decides to get on the top rope and do a somersault dive/tope onto Mako Satomura. And she just, I think her back just splats on the concrete. You're just like, what the hell? Because she's so exhausted. And now she's decided to start throwing her body against all odds against Mako Satomura. I was watching this going, oh my God, I think these two are going to kill each other.
And like, that is the story of the match. The story of the match is one of both competitors reaching physical exhaustion and Mako just barely hanging on.
Yes.
It's maybe my favorite physical exhaustion match that I like. It's hard for me to think of one that I like more than
the third where Mako is, she does a move, she goes for a pin, she gets two, she does the move again, she gets two,
and Akira's still trying, and then when she goes for that suplex and she can't quite get it anymore, but she still pulls off the Michinoku driver afterwards.
Yes. Yeah, because she does like a couple of those like weird, I don't know what it's called, quite frankly, because it's not exactly a T-bone suplex, but she gets her under and she's lifting her up and she's dropping her right on her freaking head. And she does it a second time and it's a two. And then she can't suplex again and then gets the, yeah. Oh, geez. This was so good.
This is so good. There are other much longer, like New Japan Wrestle Kingdom style matches that very much center around that physical exhaustion as the narrative thrust. They would have a hard time measuring up to what these two women deliver in this ring.
People don't do the exhaustion anymore because they're in such good shape. And yeah. They don't know how to sell it. I mean,
there's a pace thing that's requisite to this too, right?
Yes.
Like this, the exhaustion at the end is purchased by
yes.
the pace that they yes. go at from minute 6 to 16.
Yeah, it's one of those, and just the hard physicality of it. It's one of those things where, you know, look, I like a good indie style, you know, smooth dancing choreography match occasionally. But it's also why I can't get into Will Ospreay and Kenny Omega as much as other people, because I want
I
them.
I can just as main event acts.
Well, for me, it's like one of those things where it's like, all right, I've thrown all these aerial moves at somebody and it's not beating them. I'm tired. Where's the desperation? Where's the what am I going to do next type of thing, as opposed to just what they do now is kind of the Becky Lynch is one of the worst at these. I hate it, where she's like holding her head and rubbing underneath her lip and like, oh my God, what do I do? You know, as opposed to like showing.
I want someone to go from the top rope, go for a top rope missile drop kick, and realize that their legs are too weak and duff it because they can't make the distance.
Yes, I want to see them struggling to get up under that top rope because
they don't have enough spring left in the legs anymore. So they would have what would be a clean missile drop kick attempt, but they come up short, and that gives their opponent the advantage because they're tired.
I'm glad I stuck it through because I was physically uncomfortable with the amount of slapping in the beginning, in the first couple minutes of this match. And I was just like, oh no, is this going to be this the whole time or whatever? But you're right. That second third of this match where Mako has just decided, I'm going to use my body as a weapon. I'm going to throw whatever I can at this woman. Incidentally,
that's my shit right there. Like, what I like about wrestling is the choreographed
Ricky Morton stuff.
Desperate. No, like the desperation. I want to believe that in your performance,
yes,
that you are throwing absolutely everything you possibly can at your opponent to obliterate them. And I want to see the rawness and the desperation of it, because that, as I said, purchases all these great moments at the end of the match.
If you want a palate cleanser, I turned on a WCW Saturday Night tag match or worldwide match from 1999 with, it's a hero, Hokuto is on one side, and it's Medusa and a very young Mako Satomura as a baby face, energetic baby face, still fairly thin, still fairly young. This is when they had a working arrangement with the GAE. Or Gaia, I think is how you call it, Gaia, something like
Gaia.
That.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, still had Sonny Ono in there, but it was fun to watch Mako Satomura play, like scrappy, energetic, going to lose, but give it. And Kira Hokuto has the whole. This is when she's in her like white wig with the oxygen mask look and stuff like that. She looks awesome. But this match, I wasn't sure what to expect, and I got so much more out of it. And that's what I love about doing Vader Club 2 is like sometimes when I'm just hearing about a match and I just pick it out of randomness and I don't watch it beforehand, you know, to screen it. But yes, it's on YouTube. Go out, find it. Akira Hokuto versus Mako Satomura. Chris will select next week.
Next week we're going to have Disorderly Conduct versus the Texas Hangmen.
Are you serious?
No, they're the same team, Jeff.
Okay, thank you.
Did you know that Disorderly Conduct actually were the Texas Hangmen under the masks?
Oh, the Texas Hangmen. Okay, I was thinking.
Yeah, that was no, that, no, that was you know, the joke. Yeah, yeah, there. Yeah.
Okay, no. I knew themselves. That. You know, well, I was. This is where my WCW knowledge kicks in because I thought you were talking about Tex Slazenger and Shanghai Pierce.
Oh, there's other Texas Hangmen. That's also true.
No, the Texas Hangmen. I love their gimmick from AWA, yeah. And then coming into WCW with just the. They were the black. I think they were the Blackhearts also at one point. You know, just the pure black mask and going in. Loved them when I first saw them. But let's end it there. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13, or you can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. I just do show updates on that thing, and you don't have to listen to my bad jokes. We're part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I also do a show on the Fight Game Media Network called The Dynamite Show. About 20 minutes after it finishes, we go live on YouTube, myself and Paul Fontaine. I need to write out this script someday and do that. But and it drops in your audio catchers the next morning. Chris has Instagram. He's going to plug that along with stuff he might be able to intrigue you to buy from him now.
Dr_Nove is my name on Instagram. If you are... so inclined and you want to get ahead of the curve, you can go and subscribe to the Patreon, the patreon.com/DWATG. It's going to be converting over to a music thing here in the not-so-distant future. I just got to start doing the behind-the-scenes work on that sort of thing. Make sure to go and check me out on Spotify as well. And if you or anyone you know is so inclined for music lessons, I'm still teaching them. At least that's what I try to tell myself.
I'm still teaching.
Yep. So go ahead, message me, make that happen. And remember, next week, Disorderly Conduct versus the Texas Hangman. It's going to be a banger. Five stars. Meltzer loved it.
Yeah, followed by the Minnesota Wrecking Crew 2 versus the Destruction Crew.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.